Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf puts a cork in plans to privatize state liquor sales, a priority of the Republican-led legislature. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Governor Wolf says he doesn't want to sell a state asset before it reaches its full money-making potential. House GOP spokesperson Steve Miskin is predictably disappointed.
This privatization bill was bringing in more than $200 million new recurring revenues each year and for this year's budget. And that's new money that could be dedicated for human services and for our schools without raising taxes.
The plan would have phased out state stores by opening up the sale of wine and spirits to private stores, bars, and other businesses already selling beer. It also would have leased the rights to control product selection and prices. Republican supporters say the state shouldn't be in the business of selling alcohol, especially when it's standing in the way of customer convenience. The state store employees who would be affected by privatization belong to Local 1776 of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. Joining me now with their reaction is Local President Wendell Young. Wendell, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Dave, thanks for inviting me. It's good to talk with you again.
Is it appropriate to say that you're breathing a sigh of relief?
You know, I never completely relax when it comes to liquor privatization in Pennsylvania. This recent round has been over 4 years now, and a very good turn for us electing a new governor with Governor Wolf, and he's been very clear about his desire to modernize the system and allow it to be more flexible and provide greater consumer convenience and therefore raise more revenue for Pennsylvania. But, you know, we never take it for granted. We're working very hard to support the governor and his overall budget priorities of better schools, fairer taxes, better paying jobs, more fairness for people who have to work for a living. And so we don't think that our job's done here. You know, we're big supporters of the governor, and we're going to continue to work to get a good budget passed. And if that includes liquor modernization, I think that'll be good for everybody, for the consumers, the taxpayers, all involved.
So, Wendell, let's look at that spectrum between maintaining the status quo, eliminating the PALCB, and what you are referring to as modernization. What form might that take?
Well, modernization, there's a couple of really simple things we could do to make the system more consumer-friendly. Many of the stores, 75% of all the stores, are closed on Sundays. Well, that's because the legislature requires them to be closed. It's not because the PLCB won't open them. But there is more. Direct shipment. Direct shipment is now required by states under the law. Our state has not brought its laws up to date. So we could do direct shipment very simply and easily for those who want to ship from a winery maybe they visited while on vacation. Variable pricing is also something. Pennsylvania is the only place that currently operates under a uniform pricing model, which means every product sold in the shelves of the wine and spirit shops is priced at a flat rate markup of 30%. In every other state, every other retailer can apply and wholesaler can apply variable rates of markup. We can be even better and more competitive and maximize the profits back to the taxpayer if the legislature would approve variable pricing.
Wendell, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave. Take care.
United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1776 President Wendell Young. The liquor privatization bill was just one piece of a moving budget picture in Pennsylvania. Another piece that lawmakers feel a bit more optimistic about is pension reform. Republican House Majority Leader Dave Reed says talks on that bill will pick up where they left off before the governor vetoed the GOP budget yesterday.
I think the pension discussion was very fruitful, and we were actually kind of in the ballpark of where we can end up being.
Now on hand to flesh out the budget picture is John Micek, editorial and opinions editor at Penn Live and the Patriot News. Hey, John.
Good evening, Dave.
Why were lawmakers devoted to this and a pension reform bill rather than the details of the budget now in overtime?
It's all of a piece. Part of the Republican budget plan depends on the sale of the liquor stores. They derive about $200 million in revenue from the liquor privatization bill. You don't get any upfront savings in the first year from the pension reform bill. But that's a big deal for them because they want to reform the benefit structure to try to save the state money and to try to sort of get at least a handhold on the $60 billion unfunded liability in the state pension system.
What are some of the major features of the pension reform bill?
All right, so the biggest thing that your listeners need to know, Dave, is that it reform the existing benefits structure. People who are in the system now would still be in what's known as the defined benefit pension. That's, you know, it's the, you know, annuity payments that they would get. New employees and new lawmakers who come in after the 16 cycle, I think, will be put into a defined contributions benefit plan. That's a 401k to you and me or something similar along those lines. That by far is the biggest change to the existing system.
Thanks, John.
You are quite welcome, Dave.
Penn Live and Patriot News' John Micek on Newsworks Tonight. One new wheelchair-accessible taxi has hit the streets of Philadelphia, and dozens more are on the way, though disability rights advocates say it's not nearly enough, as WHYY's Tom McDonald explains.
50 special wheelchair taxi medallions have been sold, and 11 more will be auctioned this year. But up until now, just 7 of the 1,600 cabs in Philadelphia could accommodate a wheelchair. Disability advocates were in hand in South Philadelphia as the new Dodge minivan was inspected and its medallion attached to the hood. Jim Nye, who's director of the Taxi and Limo Division of the Philadelphia Parking Authority, says, unlike regular cabs, the accessible taxis will all have to be new.
Currently, a taxi cab can be placed into service up to 135,000 miles.
With only a handful of accessible cabs on the street, Alan Holdsworth says it's difficult for him to be sure he can go somewhere and get back home, too.
There's still a long way to go yet in Philly, but, you know, at least it's a start. But, you know, you'll never be a world-class city until you have an accessible cab service.
Parking Authority head Vince Fennerty had to use a wheelchair for a few months as a teenager.
I can remember when I couldn't get into a cab with a wheelchair when I was 18 years old when my mother tried.
Fennerty says he's supporting new regulations pending in Harrisburg that would mandate all city taxis become wheelchair accessible when they're replaced. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
A Philadelphia-based neuroscientist-turned-artist has attempted a rather ambitious task, turning Philadelphia into one interconnected brain. From WHYY's Health and Science Desk, Alana Gordon reports.
The human brain contains billions of neurons, billions, and woven together, they somehow create consciousness, thoughts. Greg Dunn spent years examining these building blocks under the microscope as a researcher. It wasn't just the science that struck him.
It is the spontaneity and the unpredictability of the branching patterns found in neurons, which is what makes them so beautiful.
He started painting them in the style of Japanese scrolls. He soon turned to making more complex micro-etchings using elements of optical engineering. As light reflects off the metal, it reveals nuances of the brain. When a person moves around the work, the reflection changes and the neurons shift. All of this got done thinking.
There's absolutely parallels between the emergent activity of a city and the emergent activity of a brain.
Aren't we all just little neurons connecting in chaos to create a broader city? Dunn's now portraying Philadelphia as a brain, with each neighborhood representing a different function. His collaborator, Penn physicist Brian Edwards, says instead of looking at neurons firing from, say, the hippocampus into the cerebellum, imagine thousands of lines reflecting traffic patterns shooting from Northern Liberties into West Philly.
And then West Philly might do some processing where you have a lot of local connections, and then that might fire into South Philly, which then does some more processing and converges with some other activity in North Philly.
The hope, the two say, is to convey a deeper appreciation of just how fast the brain is. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
A showcase of Dunn's work, called Mind Illuminated, opens tomorrow at the Mutter Museum. Turning to this evening's headlines, in New Jersey, Stockton University says developer Glenn Straub is not serious about buying Atlantic City's former Showboat Casino, and the institution will seek a new buyer for it. Stockton President Harvey Kesselman says it will actively look for other buyers for the property, which it hoped to turn into a satellite college campus. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's administration is backing off a proposal to restructure Medicaid payments to nursing homes. A trade association found the new plan would have rewarded 13 homes accused by Pennsylvania state prosecutors of failing to meet residents' most basic needs. Pennsylvania Human Services Secretary Ted Dallas told advocacy groups today that responses to the proposal prompted his agency to reconsider it. Overcast, 74 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. The chance of scattered showers persists into this evening and then remaining cloudy overnight, low 66 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny, high 78, a 30% chance of scattered showers. For Independence Day, partly sunny, a chance of scattered showers. Saturday's high 82 degrees and then mostly sunny days. Sunday and Monday, high both days in the mid to upper 80s. Still ahead, the Brandywine River Museum features an exhibit for the self-taught African-American painter and war vet, Horace Pippin.
He has a characteristic boldness to his style and use of color that pushes him beyond what most people think of as self-taught artists or naives.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Thursday, July 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the Rutgers Camden campus. Learn more at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. The Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
Abington Hospital Jefferson Health supports WHYY. Abington Hospital has been recognized as a fully accredited chest pain center by the Society of Cardiovascular Patient Care. The specialized physicians at their Heart and Vascular Institute help patients who arrive with symptoms of a heart attack, quickly evaluating patients experiencing these symptoms and offering the best available treatment options. If you have chest pain, their team is dedicated to helping you continue to enjoy life. Learn more at jefferson.edu/abington.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Self-taught American artist Horace Pippin grew up in Westchester. He lived through World War I, segregation, and loss before dying nearly 50 years ago. He created his own visual language that spoke about African-American life between the wars. Pippin is celebrated as a true American original in the major retrospective, The Way I See It, at the Brandywine River Museum. WHYY's Elizabeth Perez Luna has this report.
Horace Pippin returned from World War I with a crippling arm injury caused by a sniper shot and images of mayhem in his mind.
Part of the way that he was injured, from what I understand, was that he had fallen into a trench and there was actually bodies on top of him and he couldn't move. You know, that imprints your mind in a way that's never going away.
But while in France, says writer and artist Kimberly Camp, Pippin also saw something else.
And also in being in Europe, and you know, in Europe, there's a whole different way that art is viewed. And so you have people that are assuming at that time that art is a part of the fabric of their community, which wasn't the case in the United States at the same time.
As a soldier in the famous all-black 369th Infantry Regiment, he was awarded the French Croix de Guerre and a pension that allowed him to take the time, 10 years in fact, to relearn how to draw and paint with his left arm holding the other. He started by drawing his surroundings in Westchester.
So the next site would be Gay Street, where he painted his painting Harmonizing, in which he shows an impromptu gathering of singers.
The four young singers are seen huddled near a wooden fence in a typical Westchester block. Parts of the city haven't changed much since then, says Mark Teisler, a guide from the Brandywine River Museum who designed a walking tour of Pippin's Westchester. The tour is part of the first retrospective of the artist's work in 20 years. Aptly titled As I See It, the 65 works in the exhibition reveal a narrative visual style that shows his sophisticated use of colors and forms, says Camp, former president of the Barnes Foundation, where Pippin spent some time studying.
He has a characteristic boldness to his style and use of color that pushes him beyond what most people think of as self-taught artists or naives. Pushes him squarely in that category of the modernists. And a lot of his technique, and people have sometimes said that his brushwork is like Van Gogh's brushwork.
Audrey Lewis, curator of the Brandywine River Museum show, says Pippin's interest in American history is revealed in his thematic series.
They are often about subjects that have meaning to African American citizens, especially in that time. The story of Abraham Lincoln, the story of John Brown, the abolitionist, those were his major history paintings, and he did series on both of them.
And then there are the war paintings.
They remind you of Edward Hicks' Peaceable Kingdom, but there's things going on in the background that are not peaceable. They're really about the war and about what's going on in the South and racism and just suffering in general.
In the work Holly Mountain, you can see the lion and the lamb, wolf and deer, a shepherd dressed in white, children playing. But in the forest behind it, soldiers and tanks lurk in the shadows, bodies hang from trees as reminders of lynching. In his 1938 essay, How I Paint, Pippin wrote that he goes over every picture several times in his mind, so when he's ready to paint, I have all the details I need. Pippin was a successful artist, and his work was purchased by collectors, private and public, partly because he attracted the attention of Dr. Albert Barnes at a gallery show in Philadelphia. Barnes invited Pippin to study at the foundation, and they became close friends. Art writer Judith Stein, who curated the first retrospective of Pippin's work 20 years ago, says his success was well-earned.
We are all of our time, and what we write and paint is very specific to our time. The great art goes from that specific to some universal, and that was that quality in Pippin, which leads me to consider him just one of the finest American painters of the 20th century.
The retrospective, Horace Pippin's The Way I See It, is at the Brandywine River Museum in Chads Ford until July 17th. Elizabeth Perez Luna, WHYY News.
This 4th of July marks the 50th anniversary of the first gay rights demonstration in Philadelphia, when a group of activists demonstrated on Independence Hall for the same rights afforded straight people. Activists Arabeo, originally from Cuba, came to Philadelphia in 1962. She didn't take part in the 1965 action, but she has been involved in the gay rights movement in Philadelphia from its beginnings. She spoke to producer Jeanette Woods about Rusty's, a lesbian bar that was located near 11th and Walnut Streets. It was a place to gather, meet friends, and be part of the gay community, but not without serious risk.
Rusty's was a typical gay bar. It wasn't particularly attractive. Decoration was not one of their offerings. They had a jukebox because that was before disco. And it was at the top of the stairs on the second floor behind Baron Variety Room. That was the name of the bar downstairs. And that was a bar open to the public. We have a male bartender because I think at the time women couldn't serve behind the bar in Pennsylvania, unless they were the owners. And of course, Rusty was not the owner, so she couldn't do that. So that was the only man. They didn't want any clear demonstration of affection between the women because that might get them in trouble. So if anybody got too chummy with their partner, they would come and tap you in the shoulder. There was a lot of drinking, obviously, it was a bar. For those days, it was very loud. So there was not much room for conversation. So you drank more because you had to do something. And of course, there was dancing, which I understand in Pennsylvania, I think two women could dance, but not two men. If there was a raid, you will know that they were coming because somebody will unplug the jukebox and then the lights will go on. And then, you know, you were in the middle of it. I realized that, yes, I could go to a bar, I could go to gay functions, but I always had to fear that the place was going to be raided and I was going to end up in jail. And that would have really been very serious development because I wasn't a citizen. We had to confront this reality that what we did, which was the same scene that people in the heterosexual world that were in the same position will do just for pure fun. It was always under the shadow of the police coming in, or you getting in some sort of problems because of your sexual orientation. You had to remember the mood of the country at the time, in the 60s. There were a lot of groups claiming their rights. So that had an impact on us, obviously. People were more inclined now to be mad. I felt the same way. I mean, I was mad. I mean, I did not think that, first of all, we were asking for something that was detrimental to anybody else. And that if they were going to talk about equality, they had left us behind, together with a number of other people. So I thought it was totally justified. I didn't feel that I was doing anything against the society, but we were trying to actually let society know that they had not really fulfilled the promise of the Declaration.
That's activist Ada Bayo recalling the first gay rights demonstrations 50 years ago in Philadelphia. Finally this evening, U.S. Customs and Border Protection has intercepted two new destructive and invasive insects in Philadelphia. A species of longhorn beetle was found in a shipment of Costa Rican pineapples. 5 days later, a species of thrip turned up in a shipment of Colombian plantains. After both were submitted to a local USDA entomologist, it was verified that the discoveries are both national and local firsts. Experts say longhorn beetles and thrips are both threats to agriculture in the U.S. The interceptions come about 3 weeks after two other new species were intercepted in Philadelphia. Homeland Security estimates that on a typical day, they intercept over 400 agricultural pests and diseases nationally. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. When companies look to pull up stakes and move their operations, they seek out sites they're ready to move into. And tomorrow evening, we'll look at what Pennsylvania is doing to make more of those sites ready and roll out the red carpet to new businesses. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Supporting WHYY, Moore College of Art and Design offers career change part-time evening programs for adults at their convenient Center City campus. Students can create new options for their future by earning a professional certificate in interior design, print and web design, motion graphics, fashion design, or fashion merchandising. Registration for the continuing education summer session begins Monday, July 13th. Further details at moore.edu or 215-965-4030.
On the next Fresh Air, the Supreme Court correspondent for the New York Times, Adam Liptak, will analyze the term that just ended. We'll talk about some of the biggest decisions on issues like marriage equality and the Affordable Care Act, and how the court appears to have drifted toward the left in the last 9 months. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.